tear down the temple, tear down the buildings. And the good that the coming of the Messiah promised would be laid in store for a future date so distant. I mean, it's been 2,000 years already. Not quite, actually. It hasn't been quite 2,000 years, but that's 1978, really. Or something like that. I remember, I used to calculate, like, what year are we really in from the time Jesus left? We're only in the late 1900s. And we haven't come up on 2,000 years yet. It's been a long time. And you think of all the years of darkness, all the years of toil and trouble and pain and suffering and false doctrine, false men, wicked men entered into the church, the tree corrupted and grown in a manner that is unnatural. The leaven ballooning the bread beyond proportion. The church corrupted by men who handle the word of God deceitfully. Who in their time hid the word of God so that men would not see it. And think of all that God left man to. It's a tragedy. But not without purpose. He subjected the creation to vanity in hope. In hope of the sons of God. Because really, you know, we weep at it. Man weeps for himself. And if insects could weep, they'd weep for themselves. At their tragic state. At the meaninglessness of their existence. We are not much better than they. We who go down to the dust, and all our works are finished, and we pass them along, how long will they really last? It's a tragedy. And as a man, Christ felt our tragedy. And he wept for man and for the city. I mean, through the city, he was weeping for man. Not man in general, but just in that spot, when touched with that moment. If Jesus thought about everything he could possibly think about at all times, he would be weeping constantly. Because there's a lot. Sorrow is good. It is better to be in the house of mourning than the house of rejoicing. And I rejoice, and I have joy. But Jesus was a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief as well. I don't think he walked around with a sour expression on his face, but I don't think he walked around with a smile plastered to his face either. You know, you look at the old movies with Jesus. Like, what was that one called? King of Kings or something like that? You know, and they have this really sour, very unearthly Jesus. But it gets to be too much. I mean, he seems almost inhuman. Kind of like the Passion of the Christ also with the flogging where he seems inhuman. Though in that movie, I thought the character definitely seemed human, but the other things seemed unrealistic. They were unrealistic, actually. And then, but then I watched the Gospel of John, which I loved because it had the Word of God, you know, the whole Gospel of John, word for word, contained in this movie. I thought, this is great. Except Jesus is walking around with a smile on his face. What are you, hypocrites? You hypocrites! I mean, it's just absolutely, it's hard to bear. Hey, I don't think Jesus should never crack a smile, but it'd be better if he would just do it now and then, like everyone else. He was a man, not a walking puppet. You know, who walks around with a smile? But Jesus, I'm just so happy. I'm Jesus. Here I am, God. I'm on the earth. I just want to spread joy. And you read his teachings. He didn't spread a lot of joy. It was like a lot of, oh, wow, austere. You know, austere means severe. It's some pretty severe teaching here. Some pretty rough stuff. He can't deliver this. You can't seriously teach these things with a smile plastered to your face all the time. Because they're serious. Unto you it is given to understand the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven. But to them it is not given. It's given in parables. That seeing they may not see, and hearing they may not hear. And that they, lest they be converted, and I should heal them. And I can't keep a smile on my face the whole time. And it sounds ridiculous. You know, you can't have him smile and then all of a sudden breaking down in tears. It's like, what's with him? He is a man of a continuum of emotions and feelings. Like any other man in that regard. He was touched with our feelings in every way, like as we are. Verse 45. You know, he wasn't some ethereal being. He was a man. Verse 45. And he went into the temple and began to cast out them that sold therein, and them that bought, saying unto them, It is written, My house is the house of prayer, but ye have made it a den of thieves. And he taught daily in the temple, but the chief priests and scribes and the chief of the people sought to destroy him, and could not find what they might do, for all the people were very attentive to hear him. People really wanted to hear him, and they couldn't figure out, how do we get this guy? How do we get at him? The logistics of it, and also the sort of the politics of it. One aspect is he's always got people around him. And we don't want to do this publicly, lest there be a stir. What are you doing? We were listening to him. What, do you want to arrest him? For what? He's saying some pretty important things. In fact, a lot of it I perceive to be against you. Now, obviously, that would be obvious. They're jealous. This quote, when he casts out the money changers, is a composition of Isaiah 56:7 and Jeremiah 7:11. You know, my house should be called the house of prayer. You know, is this house which is called by my name become a den of thieves in your eyes? Jeremiah 7:11. You read it for yourself. It's good to go look those things up and see the context as far as there's more said to it than that. You know, they had turned the temple of God into a place of thieves, buying and selling, trading and making profits. You know, I see a lot of these churches, they start bringing bookstores in and all this stuff in, and it's like they're selling all this stuff. I thought you wanted to help people. But really, you just want to make money. And like, oh, well, it's still the ministry. Well, who the heck are you ministering to? That's what I want to know. Well, we're building another church in another town. So you can sell books there and sell coffee there and whatever the heck else you're selling. And your minister is the richest guy in the whole place. We're going to build a church here. We're going to build a church there. We're going to take the money in here. We're going to take the money in there. Oh, we'll do a mission far away. What about the people here? They haven't even been fed yet in the spirit. I mean, because we're fat in America. We don't need food. Our poor don't need food. They need the word of God. They really do. Because the government is taking care of the poor. I mean, you can get your link card and you can have food. If you have children, you know, it's just a question of responsibility. Some people, obviously, like people who end up homeless or unable to support themselves, maybe because of mental illness, they need some extra help. But a lot of people know how to use the system to obtain the things they need. We have a lot of food. It's not the big problem. In fact, the abundance of food is the problem in our country. The abundance of everything, of idols. We're like Sodom and Gomorrah, and not just because we got sodomites getting ready to get married. No. You know, the sodomites would have laughed at our homosexuals because they want to get married.